And good afternoon. It is a Thursday, July the 13th, 2017. 13 minutes past the hour on this rainy Thursday afternoon. But it's rained all week, so we will just keep dealing with it. This rainy summer that we have had, one of the rainiest, I think, in a long time. Like I said yesterday, I'm going to have to pull out the Farmer's Almanac and see if they predicted this rainy Ohio summer. We've got a great show today. We are going to be in the know by the time this show is over. I want to tell you what's coming up next hour. We're going to be joined at 1:15 by Dr. Ronald Fineman, let me put it this way. His prediction is that Donald Trump, President Trump, will not last in office through the spring of next year. He's an author, a political scientist, and he says President Trump will not make it through next spring. And with all that's went on this week, apparently that has been escalated, but don't take my word for it. We'll have Dr. Fineman on at 1:15. Also next hour, we're going to be joined by our Congressman, Jim Jordan. And with everything going on healthcare-wise, it's going to be a fascinating discussion on healthcare and what he thinks about Russia and Trump and where we are and what's going on. So our representative, Congressman Jim Jordan, next hour as well. But this hour, we're going to be joined by one of my favorite guests. She is a columnist for The Daily Beast. You might remember her from the long-running TV series, The McLaughlin Group. I certainly do. And she's going to help us sort out what's going on with Russia and healthcare and everything else in the world, as she has done so many times. It's always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones Eleanor Cliff. Eleanor, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for asking, Scott.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and we talked a little bit before we came on the air. We've got the rain and you've got the heat.
Right, exactly.
Over 100 in Washington there, from what I
know. Well, I don't know if the actual temperature is that they factor in. It's very humid, and so they factor in the humidity index. You know, we don't just have simple weather anymore. You know, we have rain events, and we have complicated formulas to arrive at how you feel about the temperature. It's very hot, to break it down to its simplest element, and they're telling people to stay indoors and animals to stay indoors until 8 p.m. So, yeah.
Well, you
know, world. Frankly, this is not a problem. What bothers me is the iceberg that broke off in the Antarctic, I think it is, which is very scary. We've never seen that before, and exactly what that means about rising oceans and the implications are. That's a serious event.
You know, Eleanor, I never understood this. When we're talking about global warming, why is that a partisan issue? What is partisan about that?
You know, I've never quite understood that myself. But I think it was the one of the major papers recently did a long takeout on how climate change became partisan. And I think the phrase global warming, people who did not really want to address that because it's expensive, it was seen as expensive to address it. And on the advice of pollsters, they stopped using the phrase global warming and used climate change. And then people who advocate, doing things to avoid drastic changes in the climate, moved away from using the phrase global warming, too. It was seen as very divisive. And so now we talk about climate change, and in a way that seems kind of harmless. The climate changes, every day. So why should we worry about that? And it seems like it's off in the future, and so you don't have to worry about it now. But climate change is taking place quite rapidly, and governors and mayors in Florida have to take steps now to mitigate its worst effects. So I think it's with us, whether politically there's support across the two parties or not. People who are actually on the front lines of having to operate government understand that it's having an impact. And insurance companies are also facing it and how they assess their rates depending on what they expect to happen. So it's kind of been factored into our economy.
I like to think that anybody who ends up in Washington, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever they are, if they're an office holder, I like to think that they have intelligence. How long are we going to go on where there are still people who deny it? Maybe they don't want to throw money at it, but how long can they keep denying it? Do you think they really believe it's not going on?
Well, I think if they take the position of denial, they also believe that it's somehow natural, and they look back over, you know, many hundreds of years and thousands of years and say, well, there have been changes in the past. But the weight of scientific evidence is so on the side of climate change and the adverse effects if we allow it to continue unchecked. I mean, I'm quite proud of a lot of Governor Brown in California has really taken this on. President Obama, by raising the fuel requirements for cars, that was a major step when he did that. And when you look at the Paris Treaty and the fact that the number of nations who are not part of that, the United States is not in very good company. I think Syria, one or two other countries, and one of them is not part of it because they don't think it goes far enough. I mean, we really are isolated on this figure, on this treaty. And I think a lot of, you know, the bright side of that is that a lot of governors and mayors are just continuing with all the steps that they've taken. And they're also arguing that there's money to be made in combating climate change. There's more money in, you know, in wind energy than there is in coal, trying to prop up coal, to put it very crassly. And Al Gore is coming out with a new movie, which I gather is a sequel to his earlier movie about climate change. So I think the topic will probably get a lot more attention over the coming weeks and months.
Al Gore has certainly become the face and voice of this for a long time. Why did that happen? First one to bring it into the public because of the position he had?
Yes, and when he ran for president, he wanted to showcase, I think it was still called global warming at the time, as an issue, and his advisors told him not to do it, that it was a boutique issue, and people really didn't care about it, and it wasn't a voting issue. So when he was in office and when he was campaigning for president, he really didn't focus remarks and his public action so much on that issue. Since leaving office and since losing that very close election in 2000, climate change is where he has put all his energy. I mean, he trains people to go out and you know, be activists in communities and inform people, and you know, it's very much his cause. And I don't really know much about this new film that's coming out, but it's part of his effort to really get the American public to focus their minds on what he believes, and I agree with him that this is an existential threat to the planet.
Are there people who are on the planet now who will see the really bad effects of this in their lifetime?
Yes. I mean, around the world, some poor communities in Asia are just going to get wiped away. Right here, home in Florida, the Miami Beach mayor has been shouting at the top of his lungs, "Look, our streets get flooded every time there's a rainstorm, and we've got to take steps to shore up our boundaries for the ocean and support our businesses. And I believe insurance companies really do, their livelihood is threatened if things get so out of hand that they can't finance the impact. So, but that's all the kind of the negative end. But then you look, the solar panel industry. Obama took a lot of heat because they gave a grant to one industry that went belly up. But solar is now a going concern in this country, and there are ways to make money from going green. And if you have any young people in your life, they have grown up. They are growing up with the awareness that the planet needs protection, and they are very aggressive people when it comes to protecting this planet. And that cuts across. I mean, young people who are too young probably to decide whether they're Republicans or Democrats, but whatever they are, they really care about the environment. And that the millennials, that comes up in all of the polling.
Eleanor, I want to get to the big story this week. It's dominated the news cycle for the last 3 days. Don Trump Jr.'s emails with a Russian attorney. This kind of got muddy to a lot of us. Kind of explain what happened here.
It gets very complicated, yes, but the New York Times first released right on the eve of the weekend or over the weekend that Donald Trump Jr. had met with this Russian lawyer, and that Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort, who'd been the campaign manager for a time, all met at the Trump Tower. I think the date was June 9th of last year. And then the New York Times followed up saying they had the emails that Trump Jr. exchanged with a music promoter, Rob Goldstone, who they had met when they were in Moscow doing the beauty pageant in 2013. The Times had those emails, and when they alerted Donald Trump Jr. that they had them, he immediately put them all out, which was initially seen as an extraordinary act of transparency and candor, until you realize that he just did it knowing that they were going to get put up by the Times if he didn't do it. And in this exchange of emails, he is told that a Russian lawyer representing the Russian government would like to meet with him because they had information that would hurt Hillary Clinton, and that they were very anxious to help Donald Trump. And so that's the first time, and you read it, and it's almost so bald-faced that you think, oh, maybe this is fake news. But no, this was an accurate email, and Donald Trump Jr., reflecting his great desire to perhaps upend the Clinton machine, and in June of last year, I don't think a lot of people would have put odds on Donald Trump winning. I mean, so Hillary Clinton was still seen as the person to beat, and so he was looking for negative information, and he, in his return email, says, "I love it," and suggests that they meet a little later in the summer when the information could really be useful. So that's pretty damning for Donald Trump Jr. and other people in the Trump orbit who have said, oh, they had no idea that Russia had meddled at all. Why would Putin want to help Donald Trump? And President Trump actually did an interview on Fox saying that Putin really would have preferred Hillary Clinton as president, because he, Donald Trump, would, I guess, deter some of their plans, which is such an, if you follow the news only casually, you knew that Putin and Hillary Clinton did not get along, and that if the Russians had any interest in the campaign, it was to undermine her. But these emails are the first ones that we've seen where the Trump campaign had awareness that the Russians wanted to help Donald Trump get elected. So it's not a smoking gun, but it's a lot of smoke, and it just opens more doors for investigators to go down in trying to assess exactly what kind of hold the Russian government and Vladimir Putin in particular have on President Trump.
Do you think there is a hold, or was this just, we want to help you win?
I don't think the Russian government or any government necessarily just takes that the kind of steps of having an emissary meet with campaign bigwigs because they just want to help. I mean, obviously, the Russians have an interest in lifting sanctions that have been levied against their government, and they particularly were interested in lifting sanctions associated with something called the Magnitsky Act, and that in retaliation to that act, which is named after an American official who died while being held in a Russian jail, the Russians banned all adoption of Russian children by Americans. And so the initial explanation from Donald Trump Jr. was that this meeting was just about adoption. Well, you know, the adoption is a cover for getting rid of sanctions, and getting rid of sanctions is a ruse to see what they can get out of the Trump campaign should he be elected. But it's dangerous business to cavort like this with a representative of a foreign government, and a foreign government that, while we're not at war, there is some hostility. So the meeting itself, this is nothing necessarily wrong with it, unless something of value was being offered and potentially being considered. That runs into campaign finance laws. But over the last couple of days, you've seen competing, you know, lawyers and ethics experts holding forth on, you know, what exactly the criminality might be, where this might lead, and I think a lot of that is open for discussion. But I think one thing is clear: it's ensnared the White House and the president himself in Donald Trump Jr.'s problems. And Trump Jr. is not part of the administration, but the White House put out a statement about the initial stories that broke on the New York Times, and they formulated that statement with lawyers both on the ground in Washington and aides working with the president on Air Force One. So you have, you know, the White House and the president intimately involved in this, and the statement they put out was apparently not entirely truthful. So, you know, the word cover-up emerges, and, you know, how far the administration will go to, you know, protect the president's, you know, flesh and blood. I mean, I've had people say to me, well, he could always pardon his son. Yes, the president does have pardon powers, but if you pardon someone, then they cannot go on and take the fifth in any future proceedings. And so let's just spin that out. Okay, what if the president, in a fit of pique, says, I'm pardoning my son, you know, he's a good and honorable, decent man, and this is a witch hunt, and I'm pardoning him. Okay, then the committees on the Hill call him to testify. The Robert Mueller calls him to testify. he can't take the Fifth to protect himself from incrimination because he's been protected. And is he going to then further jeopardize himself by committing perjury? I mean, he might have a lot to tell that the president might not necessarily want told. So I think President Trump is in a very difficult position here with all these people sort of freelancing under his name. You know, what did he know and when did he know it becomes a significant question. But, you know, who knows what all of these people were doing. And when I say all of these people, it's not just the son. It's General Flynn. Remember, he's out there with facing some criminal difficulty. And Jared Kushner at one point, you know, was looking into installing a direct communication between the U.S., between the White House and Russia, and he was thinking of doing it out of the Russian embassy. I mean, that was another weird story a couple of months ago. So there's just so many, dots to connect. And I don't even want to use up more of your time. But the New York U.S. attorney in New York that President-elect Trump said he wanted to keep and then abruptly fired, and then he was involved in prosecuting a case about money laundering, and this Russian lawyer, the woman, was involved in that, and they abruptly settled that soon after Preet Bharara, who was the attorney in New York, after he was fired. It was a money laundering case of $230 million, and they settled it apparently for $6 million, which was a pittance. So that now becomes an avenue to go down. Is that connected? So you've got a lot of reporters, you know, working full-time on the national security beat, trying to put all this together and see, you know, where it leads and whether it does lead to places that really do undermine our national security.
You know, Eleanor, I remember the Republican primary debates. And to be honest with you, I thought Chris Christie, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, they were all maybe even a little more harsh toward Hillary Clinton than Trump was at that point. Now, let's say one of them had gotten the nomination and not Trump. Would the Russian government, this lawyer, have contacted them with bad information on Hillary Clinton? Do you think that would have happened?
I think not, because I think Donald Trump, as a businessman in New York, had pre-existing relationships with Russian banks and Russian oligarchs. And they go back to the 90s when he had gone bankrupt a couple of times, and no American banks would, no New York banks would loan him any money. And Donald Jr. in 2008 kind of let the cat out of the bag at one point when he said a disproportionate amount of our money comes through Russia. So I think there are financial relationships there that Donald Trump does not want exposed, which is why we don't see his tax returns, which, you know, so many things have gone on with this president that are out of the norm. But we shouldn't forget one of the first really red flags about him was that he wouldn't release his tax returns, which every modern president has done. And he initially said, he would be doing it soon when the audit was done, and then it became clear he was never going to release them. So I think those things are connected, and that's why the Russians could come to him, because I mean I think they have something on him. I don't know. I try not to go too far down the conspiracy lane. But I think there's got to be something there. Donald Trump criticizes just about everybody under the sun, but he never has a bad word to say about Vladimir Putin. And this meeting is not the only meeting. There are other meetings, and they all these officials connected with Trump forget to mention it to anybody, and they didn't include it on their forms applying for security clearance. That is actually a felony if you don't reveal information like that. And you know, it's even now enveloping the Attorney General Sessions. They've been asked, the Justice Department has been asked to release the form he filled out to see what kind of information he divulged about his meetings with Russians. And they finally released something that's heavily redacted, apparently. But why does everybody forget they met with the Russians? It seems to me, you know, if this Russian female lawyer shows up with a translator and she's coming from a courtroom and they're changing the time to accommodate her schedule, that would stick in your mind somewhere. And to initially claim they had just forgotten, well, three of them that were present, it doesn't add up. And then for the president to say nobody told him about it also really doesn't hold water. And people are now going back and looking at all of Trump's comments around that time. And just, you know, days after this meeting took place, you had Trump in one of his rallies promising that he was going to give a speech all about Hillary Clinton and about all the bad things that went on with Hillary Clinton. Well, the speech never happened. But it's highly suggestive that he thought that he was getting the goods on her. And of course, the emails then begin to pop. They hack into the DNC. They hack into John Podesta's email, they meaning the Russians. And then you have Donald Trump in at least one forum egging the Russians on, saying, come on, you can find those 30,000 missing emails. So it doesn't really add up that he was completely ignorant of all of these various contacts with Russians.
As I said when we started the program, next hour we have Dr. Ron Fineman on, political scientist, author, and he says Trump will not make it through next spring. But he's been saying this for a while, that there are things going on here. The more things come out, do you think he's going to make it? Do you think that this can continue to go on and just be nothing?
I don't think it's nothing burger, as they have said. But there are three ways that Donald Trump doesn't complete his term. One, he just completely burns out, and he operates at a very high decibel level. He may just, it's not out of the question to me that he would just say, you know, screw it. You want to keep, you know, fighting among yourselves, you know, have at it. Now, that doesn't square with the fact that he formed a reelection committee on the afternoon of his inauguration, that he's collecting money hand over fist and having all these strategic rallies in the states that he needs to carry in 2020. But the burning out and just walking away is one possibility. Second, we know he's enraged about everything that's going on, and he occasionally pops off, not occasionally, often pops off on Twitter. You don't have to scratch very much below the surface to find Republicans, in addition to Democrats, kind of worried about his mental state. We're nowhere near that. I don't even know, I can't even imagine what he would do that would trigger, but there is the 25th Amendment. It would require the vice president and a majority of the cabinet to attest that he is not physically or mentally capable to carry out the duties of the presidency. And then the third avenue is impeachment. And if the Democrats had control of the House today, I imagine there would be impeachment proceedings would be underway. But so far, the Republicans have held, well, not exactly steady. They're getting nervous. They're looking at their own political futures in next year, in 2018. But I think most people think that unless, again, if he does something that they can't rationalize away, that is so over the top, that Republicans are going to stick with him, whatever, and it would take the Democrats regaining the majority in the House, which is in November of 2018, which is not impossible. Democrats only need a 24 seat pickup. And 2 years into Bill Clinton's term, Democrats lost 54 House seats. And 2 years into Obama's term, Democrats lost 63 House seats. So the numbers are there, but the Republicans have done a very good job of gerrymandering so that they've really made a lot of their districts quite safe. And Democrats, let's face it, they have not come up with a visionary economic proposal or plan that goes beyond, if you don't like Trump, vote for us. They don't have a positive message yet. So they have a chance to pick up a majority in the House next year, but it's not a slam dunk. But those are the three avenues where Trump would not complete his term: impeachment, 25th Amendment, or he just says he's had enough.
Do you see any of those happening? Is it getting close? Is it getting deeper for him?
Oh, I think if there isn't, there should be something on the internet that ranks the odds for impeachment. And I think, you know, those odds got higher after the release of this meeting. And it depends what people come up with. And it's interesting because when Woodward and Bernstein went after Richard Nixon, they were like Metro reporters. They were young. They had no experience. They had no sources. Everybody thought they were off on a fool's chase. It took them quite a long while to get the sources and pin down what Nixon was doing. What we have today is at the New York Times and the Washington Post in particular, they have national security reporters who've been there for years, who have sources, you know, deep within the intelligence community. And they're the ones who are producing most of the blockbuster stories. And, I think there are a lot of people in what the Republicans would call the deep state, the ongoing Washington, that feels very worried about what Trump is doing, and they're not all whistleblowers, but a lot of people are blowing the whistle, and the Times and the Post have, I assume, will continue to produce these stories. And you've got a special counsel who I think feels the pressure of time and doesn't want his investigation to just continue for years. So I think we should be getting, you know, some resolution to a lot of these questions by the end of this year, the beginning of next year. But I say that, I think people have to be realistic. Donald Trump has a lot of very strong support in places that matter around the country, and he's a fighter, and he may be with us for a full 4 years and more. I mean, remember Richard Nixon? Even though Watergate had erupted, was reelected in a landslide in 1972.
The question I always hear is, why can't this all be dropped It's all the media. They just dislike Donald Trump and let him get on to do what he said he was going to do. Why does that persist?
Well, it persists because it's a nice cover story for excusing the fact that he has been unable to accomplish anything much legislatively. You know, he promised the repeal and replacement of Obamacare, and the Republicans have not come up with a plan yet that can get 50 votes of their 52 Republicans. He promised this beautiful infrastructure plan. Nothing has been advanced. The White House is so chaotic and incompetent when it comes to producing, you know, legislation that that is just stalemated. He's promised tax reform. Nobody's done any serious work on that. The best they could get is a tax cut that they can't, that they wouldn't pay for, and they would just add to the deficit. So his legislative agenda is a shambles. Now, culturally, he promised the wall and keeping all these people out. So far, nobody's willing to pay for the wall, and the immigration issue has changed so significantly. It's ridiculous to build a wall. That's not where the problems are coming from. His travel ban has been partially enforced, and that will be going before the Supreme Court. Aside from rhetoric and dismantling a lot of the regulations that basically govern our air and our water and our financial transactions, he's tried to undo a lot of what was done over the last 8 years. But in terms of major legislative accomplishments, he has nothing, and he has no real pathway to getting anything. So let him get on with it, fine. But the Republicans have the White House, the House, and the Senate. You know, they should be able to get on with it, and they haven't.
Why can't they get on with it? What is the obstruction there?
The obstruction is that healthcare in particular, it's very difficult, and you can't bring in more market forces without hurting people who depend on healthcare, and so they want to limit Medicaid, and they portray Medicaid as a program, you know, largely for the poor. It pays 64% of nursing home bills for older adults. Children, people with disabilities are on that program. And you go to some of these states like West Virginia, which has a Republican senator, and she is not going to vote for a plan that ends the Medicaid expansion, because she's seen firsthand people in her state who've gotten health care for the first time, and she's not going to take it away. So he's got that on the one side of the Republican senators, and then on the other side, the Rand Pauls and the Ted Cruzes of the world, who think government shouldn't be involved in health care at all, and they think the plan doesn't go far enough. And so every time you tweak it to help one side feel better about the legislation, then the other side gets angry. And they have 52 Republicans. They can only lose two and still pass that legislation. So we'll see. And McConnell is now getting to the point where he's going to put it up, even if it's going to fail. And frankly, if he did that and forced the two parties together to prop up where Obamacare needs help, that's the appropriate policy solution. And that's what would work for the millions of people out there who depend on Obamacare. So they may get to that point, but that's not going to be a big win for Donald Trump at all. And I'd love to see movement on infrastructure. I've never understood why they didn't move with that right away, because they would have gotten Democratic support.
Eleanor,
they just don't have their act together, frankly.
With 7 minutes left, what I keep finding interesting, because I keep waiting for something to happen, because obviously the Democrats are going to run somebody for president in 2020. Donald Trump has already started his fundraising, if he gets there. What I find interesting is the only two people I hear nationally with loud voices speaking out, the only two people releasing books and going on tours, and the only two people I see heading to New Hampshire and out to campaign for the Democrats in 2018 heavy, are Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, the people from last time.
Oh, not Hillary Clinton. I don't see her heading out to... I don't think she's going to run again. But I could be wrong, maybe. But Elizabeth, I thought you were going to say Elizabeth Warren, because she also has a book and is potential. I do think there are a lot of Democrats who are going to be looking at 2020. They're younger, they're not as tested, and they're not bolting out of the gate right away. I think you got a Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, Kamala Harris, senator from California, Amy Klobuchar, senator from Minnesota. That's just to name three. A lot of them are women. Gillibrand, New York, Kirsten Gillibrand is also someone. Now, I don't know that any of them are actively planning. I think Democrats are still kind of shell-shocked over what happened, and they're part of the resistance and worried every day about what Trump is going to do next. So that beginning to groom a presidential candidate or several, I think the Democratic field could be as crowded as the Republican field was this last time. When it gets underway.
The thing about it, well, Bernie Sanders, he seems like he wants to do it. And the thing that puzzles me about Hillary Clinton, and the reason I keep bringing her name up, is she seems to be doing all the right things somebody would be doing who would want to run again. They're going out and campaigning for the people in 2018. She's speaking out against the current president. She's writing a book about why she lost the election. And she doesn't really give news interviews. She has sat down at these summits and things like that, but she always says she doesn't want to talk about it because the book's coming out. Why not talk about it? What's she got to lose at this point?
Well, first of all, the book... I'm told it's one chapter on why she lost. Otherwise, it's a book of essays about important, inspirational quotes, moments in her life. The thing is, whenever she gets out there, I don't see a big groundswell among Democrats saying she was cheated. We won her back. I don't see that. Instead, I see more of a negative response from good Democrats saying, she's had her turn. She's had two turns. Hasn't worked. We need new faces. So, I don't see. But you do make the case that she definitely is out there. But when she gets asked about the campaign, she gets asked questions. It's not, and then she gets criticized because she's not taking on enough blame for herself. She's endlessly controversial. I'm an admirer of Hillary Clinton, but I kind of get it when people say they've got exhaustion over all of the issues, and I think. I just don't see enthusiasm around a third run for Hillary Clinton.
I think you might be right in the Democratic Party, but what I noticed the first time she came out and the couple times she has done these summits, and she has yet to do a major interview with an Anderson Cooper or a network. She just hasn't done it. And why not? I mean, what's she going to say if she's got nothing to lose? And every time in these summits, they say, will you ever run again? Now, she's a former First Lady, Senator, Secretary of State. If she isn't, it would be easy. No. I mean, it'd be very easy for her to do that. She doesn't do that. She goes, well, I don't see it. She does that thing that John Kasich and everybody else does.
Well, you know, if I were Hillary Clinton and all this news came out about how illegitimate the win was of my opponent and how he had a foreign power with their finger, a thumb on the scale, I would be secretly hoping that the population would rise up and say, okay, that was a false election. We're either going to hold the election again, or we're going to elect the woman that should have won the last time. I mean, wouldn't that be sweet? But I don't quite see it happening. But she wouldn't be human if she didn't crave that kind of vindication.
I think, here's what I think, and this is just my own personal opinion, and you give me your read, Eleanor, on Hillary Clinton. I think she is waiting to see if Trump gets impeached or resigns. Because I think if he does either of those things, based upon the illegitimacy of the election, and that it was based on hate of Russia against her, I do think you would see a groundswell, because the Democrats don't control anything. And I think they would say, well, wait a second here. This is a former First Lady, Secretary of State, blah, 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 blah. And it was stolen from her. Even people who didn't...
From your lips to God's ears. But, you know, would you almost have to have Pence discredited too? Imagine if Pence were brought into this. I mean, he said now he didn't know anything before he was brought onto the team. But, you know, if you had the whole team discredited, then I guess they would move to Paul Ryan.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues is that this story this week, you know, it is about Hillary Clinton. We've got bad information on Hillary over here. Come meet us.
Right.
And Trump tweets about her all the time. She hasn't been able to walk away. And I think the story is, and I'm not saying he's going to be impeached or resign, but if it happened, the front page story is Russia colludes with Trump to beat Hillary Clinton. And then she's... for a woman who...
And Hillary Clinton graciously accepts the presidency a year and a half in.
I don't know. I don't know if we go that far. But I tell you, it wouldn't be a jump for me at that point for her to run again, because she had a determination to be the first female president. And she doesn't look tired and ready for the bleachers yet.
No, but you know what happened, actually, in both her runs? The Democrats attempted to clear the field for her, and there would be no clearing of the field.
Well, I tell you what, I'll part on this note, Eleanor. I just hope she's got her emails in order during this time. I hope there's none of that again. Hopefully she's on some server that she's supposed to be on and doing what she needs to do.
Right.
We'll see what happens from there. Eleanor, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. And we're going to come back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
So surprised that he was saying you can't drive anymore. But I enjoyed the authority with which he said to me, you cannot drive anymore. I thought, well, things have lined up pretty good now. I'm the kid and he's the old man. And, you know, it's continued on every level since. So I feel I'm in my second childhood. I've got a new father.
Norman,
He has no humor about it at all. He says this is the way it is. And, you know...
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Search for us on Facebook by typing in WWGH Marion, Ohio 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content.
Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.
Hi, I'm Angela Thomas, Marion Beltone's hearing care practitioner. 65 million Americans suffer with hearing loss every day. Hearing loss interferes with communication, which affects every part of your life. Now offering free no-obligation hearing screenings and leasing programs. 389-5566, 559 East Center Street.
Find your togetherness at the Ohio State Fair. Togetherness isn't just about where you are, it's about who you're with. Discover your inner child at the top of the Ferris wheel or speeding down the giant slide. Come face to face with a furry friend at the petting zoo. Indulge in classic funnel cakes. Bask in time-honored traditions like the butter cow. Make memories that will last a lifetime at the greatest end of summer celebration. Find your togetherness at the Ohio State Fair, July 26th through August 6th.
Tecumseh is quality family entertainment in your own backyard, a destination for history buffs, theater lovers, and families for over 40 years. Experience this world-famous outdoor drama in Ohio this summer. Tecumseh Drama.